or food into the church, refreshments must remain in the Duke Room. My name is Jennifer, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. This is an open meeting of the Atlanta Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics can participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would be also helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Jackie and Debbie, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Natalie will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Natalie. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their strength, experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And Brian will read the steps.
My name is Brian. I'm an alcoholic. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of God, of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Liz will read the traditions.
I'm not sure where they are.
Okay, thank you. Hi, I'm Liz. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. Two, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Scott.
Hi, everybody. My name is Scott Kloppenstein, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Atlantic Group. My sponsor is Duncan, and my sobriety date is June 26th of 2002. I was an alcoholic from the day I was born. That was something that was made evidently clear when I got here. My entire persona from the, my mother used to describe living with me as living with a tiger, something very beautiful and looked very cuddly, but you get too close and it'll rip your head off. Every little thing caused huge amounts of fear in me, just overwhelming amounts of fear. I used to every day throw a temper tantrum that lasted anywhere from an hour to 3 hours long. And this was an everyday thing, you know, very exhausting on my mother. I come from a broken home, which was broken way before my parents split up. So that had an odd effect on things, because my mother never worked when my parents were together, and then so she had to pick up a few jobs, and my brother and I were left to raise ourselves, pretty much. Which left a lot of freedom as far as what I could do and what I was willing to do and what I wanted to do. You know, the one thing I always knew I wanted was to be able to live my own life and make my own decisions and make sure nobody had the right to tell me what to do. I had my first drink when I was 15. I had found that I had a talent for playing music. I was always looking for something that would make me an individual, something that would make me special and unique. And music was a big part of my family. We would get together at Christmases and Thanksgivings and things like that and play together. I didn't have a lot of friends growing up, so I didn't know that everyone didn't play music all the time. I just didn't know. So when I got to high school and I got enrolled in a school for the performing arts and found that there were people that didn't play music and could appreciate what I could do. And so I started playing in bands and things like that. And most of the time, the band members that I was playing with were generally anywhere from 5 to 7 years older than I was. After a show that we had played, we went back to one of the guys' houses and they brought beer and they offered me one. And I wanted so badly to be accepted by these people. They had offered me friendship in a way that I had never known before. And this was an opportunity for me to prove that I could compete. I was on the same level. I was a peer. You know, age meant nothing to me. And so I drank that night, and I drank like a maniac. It was a Lucky Lager, tiny little brown bottles with a neat little puzzle in the top. I didn't enjoy beer, really. It didn't taste so great, but it didn't matter to me because there was acceptance in that bottle. And I realized that that bottle, what was in it, gave me the power to be who I wanted to be, which was this confident, amazing, funny, wacky, interesting fellow, which I never felt that I was. And so throughout my high school career, I used alcohol to start making friends, and it made it easier to talk to people and to make a scene so that people would remember exactly who I was. I didn't care if the scene was positive or negative, man. I just wanted people to know who I was. I started to... Then my family went off on vacation, and I went with them, and I kind of had a little dry period for a summer and then came back. And I went to school far from where I lived. And so I just quit going home because home meant I couldn't drink. By the time I graduated high school, I just quit going home altogether and would drink as much as I could. I mean, none of us really held a job, so paying for booze was not always the easiest thing in the world. Then I got the opportunity to start touring around the world as a paid musician, and this gave me the opportunity to buy my own place and support my drinking. And I started to become what I affectionately called a professional drinker. Because this is what... Yeah, he's excited. Because this was the way I was going to create my beautiful little niche, and it got really ugly really quick, you know? I started to black out all the time. Thank you very much. And there's a lot that I do not remember. I remember being asked to leave places like good friends' weddings because I couldn't be quiet. I couldn't stop breaking things. I couldn't stop hurting people. Girls I was dating would have to carry me home, literally. I mean, by the end of my drinking, I weighed 210 pounds, had hair down to here, and had a giant beard. I had given up on showering, brushing my teeth. One thing I want to say, because I'm not saying this to hear myself speak, because I'm not really listening at all. For the newcomers in the room, the person you see before you is not who you would have seen 4 years ago. I used to be called the monster by my friends because I was a terror, because I was a maniac, and I was out of control, and I looked like a beast, and I treated people around me that way. When I first came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was brought by a guy that I was out on the road with, and he overheard a phone conversation of a night that I had where I nearly choked to death on my own vomit. And he overheard the phone conversation, and he tapped me on the shoulder. He said, "Can I bring you something?" I said, "Sure." So he brought me a pamphlet, a little pamphlet that says, "Is AA for you?" He asked me to answer it honestly, and that's all I had to do, and everything would be fine. So I did that, and I answered it pretty well. I got everything right. So he asked me if the next day I wanted to go to a meeting, and I said yes. And I went with him, and we went into this meeting somewhere, and it was in a church in a bad part of town. I think it was somewhere in Connecticut, or I really have no recollection. And I looked around the room, and I saw a bunch of people I had nothing in common with. I had no idea what I looked like. All I saw was that the people in there were dirty, they were gross, and I had no way of looking at myself. And then the first guy that got up to speak to share in this open meeting was he said, "Hi, my name is Ron, and I'm an alcoholic." And he started speaking, and I started bawling because for the first time, a total stranger said words that meant something to me. And I felt a hand on my shoulder, and someone whispered in my ear, "Welcome home." And for the first time in my life, at 24 years old, I heard something and believed it. It was the first time I ever felt like I belonged anywhere, and that's all I ever wanted, was to be home. This is my home, and you are my family. For the newcomer, I know exactly what that deep, dark hole feels like. It starts very small when we're young, but it gets big, and it gets so big that it bursts outside our bodies, and it becomes an environment, a bubble in which we get trapped in, and it gets painful, and it gets dark, and it gets lonely, and that's what alcoholism will do. There's no doubt about it. There's a whole room full of people here for a reason. And there's a whole room full of people here that have found community in the arms of total strangers for a reason. I have lived in fear for most of my life, and I still struggle with fear on a daily basis. But all my life, all I ever had was options. Options to deal with fear. When I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I found answers. Now that's, you know, normal people, maybe they can live with options. I don't know. I've never been one, and I've never really known too many normal people. Thank you. But all I know is that I'm an alcoholic, which means that I need to be in action. I need to have a God of my own understanding, and I need to know other alcoholics. I need to know people who know where I've been. You know, I love my family dearly today, and we never had a relationship when I was drinking. But my family doesn't really understand the alcoholic problem. Nobody in my family drinks. I'm an anomaly in my family. But I do have a family in these rooms that holds me when I need to be held, that listens to me when I need to be heard, and it creates laughter when I need to laugh. Sharing my experience, strength, and hope for me is really easy. My experience is that I'm an alcoholic, and I need Alcoholics Anonymous or I die. Thank you. My strength comes from my higher power, which I have found by the guiding light of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my hope is that if you're new, you'll stay home because we want you here. Thank you very much.
Our second 10-minute speaker tonight is Debbie.
Hi, I'm Debbie. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome. Welcome to the newcomer. Welcome to family and friends and those affected by the disease of alcoholism. I have to tell you, I wasn't nervous, and just as I was sitting there, just nervousness came over me. This is my home group. My sobriety date is December 5th, 2001. I'm currently working step 9 again, and I'm living in 10, 11, and 12. This is a really special night, number one, because this is Tuesday night. It's my favorite night of the week. It used to be every night of the week because I drank every night of the week, but it's especially a treat tonight because there's someone in this room that is dear and true to my heart. It's the woman that 12-stepped me almost 4 years ago. Her name is Diana, and she flew in a couple days ago. And I didn't look like this or feel like this three years, 11 months ago. When I came in here, I was a very sick woman. I was walking dead. And they told me I probably had about a month left to live. When Diana picked me up at my home, my hands were black. My feet were cracked open, and I could barely see. And I had no idea where I was going. I just knew I was going somewhere off to die. I made a phone call to a place called Promises in California because I wanted to die near the ocean where the movie stars were. But God had a different plan for me. There was no red carpet for me. When I got off the plane, I looked for the limousine, and the first thing I asked for was, "Where's the limousine?" And it was a Volkswagen Jetta. My life soon changed. I had no idea what my life was going to change. I spent 30 days in a rehab in California. The first thing I said was, "You people need to understand me because I'm unique and I have a story." They sat me down and they told me, they said, "You're not unique. You're going to make all new friends." And I said, "You don't understand. My friends are dealers. My friends, I'm going to keep my friends." After a couple days, he said, "You need to pack your Louis Vuitton bags and you need to get out of here. We don't keep people like you." I packed my bags and I called a car service. And I thought for a while and I said, "I'm going to sit down and I'm going to listen to these people because I didn't want to die." I was born in New Orleans. I may look like a New Yorker, but I'm not. But I feel like a New Yorker. I've been up here about 10 years. And I can't tell you much about my family life, except that it wasn't a good one. I lived in terror. I lived in a lot of shame. I ran from my mother and my father. My father left when I was 7. My mother married 5 times. It's probably why I'm not married today. My grandmother and aunt lived with me, and they pretty much protected me. I never felt like I belonged anywhere until today, and I really feel like I belong. I remember looking out of the window as a child, always looking at the neighbors, going, "I want to move in with the neighbors." I always used to carry my sleeping bag and a bag like I was moving in with the neighbors. And My life as a child was not good. And my first drink was as a teenager. I drank a bottle of gin, and that was it for me. I had a love affair with alcohol, and I blamed everything on my family. And everything became okay. After that, I drank on and off for about 22 years. My excuse in New Orleans was the bars never closed. You know, I drank on Bourbon Street. I drank in St. Bernard Parish. I ran from the police. I went to jail. I was thrown from cars. My excuse was, it's New Orleans. We all drink here. The bars don't close. I remember one time when I was 18 years old, I was chased by the police, and I had no idea where I was going. I was just going away to Florida. I had packed my bags, and I had taken some things to feel better, and it was a sleepwalking event. And I ended up in a place, I ended up my car up on a median, and I hit a house. Police had chased me, and I remember waving my finger in the front of the police, saying, you don't know who my father is. And someone in the crowd, my friend tonight, she goes, why don't you tell him what you really said? And I said, Daddy, my daddy. And that was something that I had always done my whole life, going, you don't know who I am. And that was the first thing when I came into this program that was told to me, sit down, shut up, and move to the front. Because what I was told when I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous was get a sponsor, go to meetings, and take a look at this book, big book, and open it up. Because I always had answers to everything. I thought alcohol was my problem. And it talks about it in the big book, liquor but is but a symptom. You know, I could sit up here and I could recite everything in the big book, and I'll probably get it wrong because there's a lot of people in here that know the big book. And that's why I come to this meeting. This was my first meeting out of Malibu Promises. I came in, I sat in the back, and I was like, oh my God, what am I doing here? These people dress funny. I said, I'm never coming back. And I've been here ever since. It was my first meeting, and I come here every week. I take a service commitment, and I follow by example, and that's what I've learned in this room. I was also told by my second sponsor, Myra, to put my AA family first, and I didn't understand that because my family was dysfunctional, and you people are my family. And I've always been one of those people that have gone to the extreme. I drank to the extreme. I blamed people. I rationalized and I justified everything. And what I've learned by taking a service commitment year after year, because I've never done anything consecutively, is by coming in here and taking a commitment every year. And that's been one of the hardest things for me, is to show up every year. And I didn't always like my commitment. Is that's one of the things that's helped keep me sober year after year, is I can plan on being here every Tuesday night an hour before. You know, going to jail for a weekend is something I remember. And one of the reasons why I get involved with the correctional facilities here at Rikers Island that we bring meetings to every week, every Saturday night, is because I need to keep it green. And that's one of the things this year that our home group here did, is they decided to bring meetings into the correctional facilities. I was told when I worked the 12th step to get involved with other alcoholics. You know, I wanted to tell other alcoholics when I first came in here, you know, what my message was. It's clearly in the 12th step in the first paragraph, you know, intensive work with other alcoholics, not my message. Carry this message. And that's what the people in this room have taught me. You know, I didn't understand anything when I came in here, and I've had so many giants and so many heroes that I'm surrounded by. When I started working my steps, I had a lot of fear, and I'm surrounded by fear, and I'm so glad Scott brought that up. One of the biggest fears I had was going to the doctor, and I didn't go to the doctor for 22 years, and because when I was 18, I was brutally attacked and left to die outside of the French Quarter. And my sponsor at the time, Jeannie, I explained to her that I could never go to the doctor. She said, honey, I want you to write out your fears on this. I said, okay, I'll write them out, but I'm never going to the doctor. And she said, we're going to work through this. I worked through my fears. It took about a month. We sat in a diner. I went to the doctor. When I worked through my ninth step, as I'm working through my ninth step, I've had hundreds of amends. And as it was explained to me when I started to do my steps, that it was a continuous process. It's not something we do once. I didn't understand that when I came in here. people, one of the challenges, I thought when I came in here that everything was going to be perfect. And that's one thing for this alcoholic, it's been very hard to deal with. And with my 9-step amends, I've gone back to my family. My mother and I had absolutely no relationship. I did not speak to my mother. Today I speak to my mother. I'm not going to tell you it's a perfect relationship, but I was able to go back and make an amends to my mother through the process of amends. And today I have a relationship with her. I'm going on vacation with her in about 3 weeks. You know, one of my favorite steps that I feel like I live in, that my sponsor and I are currently working on, is step two, came to believe, talking about God. I was recently in my sponsor's office, and we were talking about God. You know, you asked me 4 years ago, who is my God? My God was a punishing God. My God made me drink. I hate God. God has punished me for everything. God made me drink. Today, my God is loving. My God is everything. And, you know, James and I were sitting in his office a couple weeks ago, and he gave me a couple of exercises. I love those, because then I can turn around and work with my sponsees and give them exercises. And it keeps me busy, and that's what I need to do. I need to keep busy, and that's what this program has taught me. And thank you for my sobriety. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous.
Bulletin board. And tonight, our main speaker is Bob.
My name is Bob Weinstein. I'm an alcoholic. And it's a joy to be here. It's a joy to see old friends like Van, or not so old, but yeah, you're old. You're old. And other people that I've known. Actually, I've been coming to this group now for 10 years, which is really exciting to me. It's a wonderful thing to come and see the growth and see the beauty of this group. You walk in and you have a lot of greeters and people saying, "Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous," and it's special. It makes me feel special, and I like feeling special, and newcomers like to feel special. So it's really good. It's also, I gotta tell you, today is election day, and I was thinking when I was asked to speak, I said, "My God, you know, I was in New York when you could drink at 18 and you had to vote at 21, and now it's the opposite. Also, I used to hate Election Day because they used to close the bars. They were afraid that they could buy your vote for a drink. And I'll tell you something, they could have gotten mine. Just that simple. I might look like I'm from New Orleans, but I was born and raised in New York. And I got to tell you, I was born in Brooklyn and raised in Brooklyn. It's a good place. And what was wonderful about Brooklyn is everybody had a basement with a bar. You see, you had finished basements. And what we used to do is we used to go down to the basements and get some of Daddy's whatever and just pour a little bit. And I remember the first time I had a little bit of that stuff, and how good it made me feel. It was a magic elixir. And it's not that I got drunk that time or anything else. I just, for the first time in my life, felt a part of. I felt like I was meant to be there. I was meant to be amongst the guys. It was nice, and it was fun. And after that, I looked to try to drink whenever I could and as much as I could. Now, I didn't get drunk all the time, but I did enjoy it because it allowed me to be a part of. And by the time I was in high school, I was drinking just about every day. I used to get into trouble. I used to get called to the dean's office. I used to get called to the vice principal's office. And my parents had to come and sit there and go through the abuse that parents have to go through when your kid is a creep. And that's just the way it was. But they tried to be nice to me. I was smart. I got good grades, and I just couldn't keep, my conduct was terrible. I just couldn't come and do the things I needed to do. And what they didn't understand, and what I didn't understand, because I don't come from a family that has alcoholism. We just don't suffer from alcoholism. They suffered plenty when I got it, but they don't suffer from alcoholism. And what happened was they kept getting called in. And finally, I remember being at the boys' dean's office, and he was just writing something in my record. And I remember him writing, as an alcoholic, we're real good at reading upside down. It said, shows an inability to learn from past experience. Shows an inability to learn from past experience. And I got to tell you, that I could sit down now because that's my story. I just didn't get it. No matter what happened, I didn't get it. And I kept doing everything over and over and over again. And I graduated from high school, and I went to college, a very good college, on a full scholarship, and life was good. My parents were excited because nobody in our family had ever gone to college. No, they were hoping to have somebody who was a professional, perhaps an attorney or a doctor or somebody of that ilk, and they looked towards me. And the truth is, the first year I went to college, I was a Dean's List student. Everything was going well, and I majored in the thing that I loved best. I majored in fraternity. And it's where the girls were, and it's where the parties were. And the fact of the matter is, those drinks made me feel good. Those drinks allowed me to do things that I could never do before. For instance, I never, without a drink, I can't say hello. It's real difficult for me. And I was able to be a part of in that school. I was able to ask girls out on dates. I was able to be a part of the debating team. I was able to act, and I was able to sing, and I was able to have, I mean, my life worked. And it just couldn't work when I didn't drink. No matter how hard I tried, I had that fear that Scott talked about that just didn't allow me to perform or do the things that I needed to do to live a normal life. And here now I'm going to college and I'm on Dean's List and everything is good and my parents are really feeling good about this whole thing. And at the end of that first year, I remember going home and mentioning to them that I had an idea. Now that's a real tough thing when you hear that from an alcoholic. But they didn't know that. I said, and this was my first decision, by the way, as far as a major decision as to what I was going to do with my life. I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave school and become a dancer with a mambo band in the Catskill Mountains of New York. And I know they love that idea. Don't laugh. I think my mother loved it. I couldn't understand a word she said. Her head was in the oven. But it just seemed like a wonderful idea at the time. And what I did was I went up there and I started dancing and I was having fun. And I really learned how to drink the way you should drink. Now I didn't have anybody to report to. So my life was working and it seemed right. And they taught me about substances other than alcohol. I was just enjoying the heck out of life. I got to wear a tuxedo every day. I was in show business. Life was good, and I'd get up there on the stage and do what I can, except for the fact that I didn't know that when we all went to drink, they stopped. Tricky people they were. And I just kept going, and finally they pulled me aside, and they said, Bob, listen, we got a problem. We got a problem. You're not keeping the beat. You're almost falling off the stage. You're coming out funny. One time I screwed up. I couldn't understand what had happened to the audience. I didn't know I was facing the wrong way. And they fired me. The nerve, they fired me. And I knew that the only reason I was drinking was because I was in show business. After all, that's the way things are. So I'll go back to school. I'll get myself a job. I'll do the right thing. I'll make my parents proud and everything's going to be okay. But I don't do that. I don't do that. You see, and I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. All I know is I need a drink. If I'm going to go get a job, I need a drink. If I'm going to go call on a customer, I need a drink. If I'm going to ask a girl out for dinner, I need a drink. And that's the way my life is going. So I'm not going back to school, and I'm not getting myself a job, and I'm not making my parents proud. Now, my parents are my heroes. My parents are my heroes. Last night, Last night I took my mother out. We had dinner and we went and we saw my son perform. He's a musician. He was performing here in New York, and life was good. We had a wonderful time. I was never there for them. I was never there for them. This program has allowed me all of a sudden to let my mother be in my life. And it's incredible for me. It's incredible for me. I didn't know that at that time. I didn't know there was a book out there that told me how to live my life. Told me how to live my life. As far as I'm concerned, the program is in this book. It's funny, I was at the meeting Thursday, and somebody asked a question, what is the purpose of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? And the answer was right there, right out of the book. Somebody said it. They said, the purpose of this book is to show you precisely what we have done. Now, precisely to me means pretty close. It doesn't mean take what you want and leave the rest. You know, precisely means we want to show you exactly what we did. We are 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And we do that by following precisely what they did. So I knew when I came in here that I had to do precisely what they did. But I didn't know that then. I didn't know that then. And I kept drinking and I kept going crazy, and I got out and I met this wonderful lady, and we got married, and I didn't remember all of that because it kept getting in the way of my drinking. And then she started having kids and I couldn't figure out how she was doing that because I was never home. And my life was really getting crazy. You know, and they wanted me to do stupid things like get a job and pay bills and raise kids and do all that. And that's stress. I don't do well with stress. So I have to have a drink. I'm going to have one, maybe two, because that'll work for me. One, maybe two. And I really believe that. In my heart and soul, I believe that. It says in the book that we drank for the effect. Now I believe it, but I didn't know that at the time. I was really down to the soles of my feet believing that I was only going to have one or two. I just wanted to take the edge off. That's all I wanted to do. And God knows I used to go right past the edge off. Boom, drunk. And I just couldn't get it. I couldn't get it. Shows an inability to learn from past experience. And that's what, in the 60s, you know, I used to love these people who used to hang around, you know, and they go, I'm just looking to get a little buzz. You know, I always wanted, who here ever had a buzz? I mean, I used to go right past buzz to puke. Want having a buzz. I just want to feel a little bit good. Couldn't do it. And my life was going on and on and on like that. My wife was starting to get upset with me, and we were going crazy, and I didn't know what to do. And we sat down, we started talking. There's got to be something we could do. There's got to be something we could do to make our lives better. Because this isn't working. Now you would think maybe that we would hear of a program or hear of something that might work. What we decided to do, and to me this was a good decision, we decided to move to California. Well, it's healthy in California. You have to understand. Our lives will be different. Our lives will work. All they think of is that we could run. I could go to juice bars and you know, carrot juice, please. You know. Double. And, you know, I just couldn't do it. I found the same sleazebag bars with the same sleazebag people, and you were one of them, I remember. And life worked. Life worked. The only thing is I didn't go home. I used to call her up and say, I'll be home in a little while. I have a business appointment, which was wonderful for a guy without a job. And she'd say, Bob, please don't drink. Please don't come home drunk. And I would get PO'd. Don't tell me what to do. I'll fix you. I'll fix you. And I really had wanted to go home. I wanted to be a good dad like my dad was. I wanted to be a good husband. I wanted to do the things that normal people do. I now realize that we're the normal ones and they're crazy. Let me tell you how crazy people are. It was Secretary's Week or something not too long ago. And we go out and we're taking this girl who's receptionist in the company that I work for, and we're taking her out to eat. And the boss says, "Would you like to order a drink?" She orders a drink. Then, and I know you've all done that, she calls over the waiter and says, "Can you put a little more soda in here? It's too strong." We've all done that, haven't we? They're normal. I can't get it. I can't get it. I'm not home and things aren't working and she's getting angrier at me and our lives are really falling apart. And I don't want my life to fall apart. I just want it to work. And she doesn't understand. I just want one or two. I want to take that edge off. I want to be a real person. And I'll perform. I promise you, this time I really mean it. And I did. I really meant it. I swear I did. I loved her. I wanted my family to work. And what happened? She told me she had to leave me. Our lives weren't working. Our lives weren't working. Please, don't go. And I'm crying, real tears. I don't want her to go. I don't want her to take my children away. I want this to work. I want it to work. I swear I will never, ever, ever drink again. Okay, I'll stay. I'll stay. And I'm good for one day. Good for 2 days. By the third day, I'm insane. And I just need to have one. Just let me have one, and I'll be okay. And I have that one, and then I have another one, and then I have another one. Because I don't know I have an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. I don't know that once I have a drink, I'm priming the pump. And I'm out there, and I'm going. And she's getting angry, and she tells me she's going again. And I say, "No, don't go. I swear I'll be good this time." And I can't be good. I can't be good. So, but she stays. And then she's going. And then she stays. And my life just isn't working. Finally, she's gone. She's gone. Takes the kids and she goes. Now, I could do whatever I want. Now my life is going to... I don't even have to make believe I'm going for a job. All I have to do is show up at the bar. And do I love that bar? Because that's where my friends are. They're all going through the same things I'm going through. And I know they're alcoholics, but I know I'm not. I could stop anytime I want. Except today. My wife left me. So I'll have a few. And they start buying me drinks, and that works for me. I should have had this done a long time ago. I mean, that's free. You know, and we're doing okay. We're doing okay. And I'm coming home, and I'm getting drunk, and I'm coming home, and I'm getting... All of a sudden, my wife calls me one day, and she tells me we have a problem with my son. My son is getting loaded and not going to school. And I say, "Oh, my God, how did that happen? I can't figure that out." And then she tells me that we have an opportunity. There's an outpatient program right there in Thousand Oaks where we were living. And if we go once a week, they will let him be part of this program. So we go. We go. And I'm for the first time in my life hearing things about Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I heard this guy stand up and he says, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have to do things for ourselves. We have to take actions and we have to take the right things. And we can't do it for a job and we can't do it for a wife and we can't do it for a husband. And we can't do it for a mother or a father or a sister or a brother. We can't. We got to do it for ourselves. If we're going to take the appropriate action, we have to do it right. And my only thought is, I hope Josh gets it. See, I couldn't see it. I couldn't see it no matter what I did. And it took me more than a year until I got it. And I got to tell you, I had come home from the bar at that time. I had come home from the bar to take my afternoon nap. And my son found me. And he found me lying on the bedroom floor. And I was just lying there because I couldn't quite make the bed. And he just looked down at me and he said, "Daddy's hammered again. Daddy's hammered again." And I heard it that time. And I don't know why I heard it. I don't know why I heard it, but I heard it that time. People have told me that I had problems, and people have told me all different kinds of things. I had been in a town as a salesman several weeks before, and it was a dry town. It was a town by the name of Anniston, Alabama. And I'm in this town, and I'm trying to sell things, and I go to where they were having a buffet the night before, and I steal two cans of Sterno, which I strain through sweat socks so I could have something to eat, and I can't get that I'm an alcoholic. I mean, that's pushing it. That's pushing it. Here I am, living in a house in Thousand Oaks, and I always said, I'm not an alcoholic. I live in Thousand Oaks. You know, and I'm living in a house in Thousand Oaks, and we don't have electricity, and we don't have gas, and we have no phone, and there is no water, and I don't get it. The house is becoming overgrown with weeds, and the neighbors are holding prayer watches, hoping that the bank takes my house so that the values in the neighborhood could go back up, and I can't get that I'm an alcoholic. I'm getting up every single morning, and I'm taking showers and washing myself, and I'm going, today's the day. It's going to be different. It's going to be really different. And what I get to do is, as soon as I get out of the shower, I take myself a bottle of Guinness Stout because my hands are shaking so much, and I drink it with a straw so I won't crack my teeth on the shaking top of the bottle. And I can't get that I'm an alcoholic. And all of a sudden he says, Daddy's hammered again. And I heard it. I heard it. That was February 21st, 1988. February 21st, 1988, and I'm proud to say I haven't had a drink since then. Now, I'm not saying everybody is going to do that, but that's my story. And I was told that by taking appropriate actions and doing the things we need to do in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, we can do that. We don't have to go out. If you're a slipper, I give you permission not to slip anymore. Just come here and work the program, and get yourself a sponsor, and read the book, and do the right thing. And by the way, don't drink between meetings. It's a much better way to stay sober. And what I got to do was I got to go with my son to clean up, because I couldn't clean up in my house. I had no water. And I got to go with him, and I got to call Alcoholics Anonymous. And they asked me if I had a ride to the meeting, and I told them I did. And I went to the meeting that night, and I don't remember if there was 15 or 115 or 1,500 people at that meeting. All I remember is there were people, and they were laughing, and they were smoking. At that time, smoking was in all the meetings. I remember going into that room, and all you saw from here up was smoke. You saw everybody's legs and then smoke. You know, I thought that was the anonymous part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this guy, Otto, grabs me right before I'm leaving, and he takes me inside, and he sits me down, and he gets me some coffee. And people are coming. They're coming, and they're giving me names, and they're giving me numbers. And nobody has a last name. I notice nobody in this program has a last name. They're writing everything down. Not one woman. How do you like that? Not one woman. And they're giving me names and numbers, and they keep coming back. Then they start the meeting, and they say, if anybody here has less than 30 days, please stand up and give us your name and your disease. You know, I'm Bob. I'm a leper. Give us your name and your disease, you know, and then sit down. And I'm not standing up. I told you, I don't do anything without a drink. And this guy Otto gooses me, you know. My name is Bob, and I'm a... And that's it. I sit down. Everybody cheers, you know. They say, you know, we do this not to embarrass you. We do this so that we can get to know you at the break and after the meeting. Now I know they do it to embarrass you. But I didn't want to do that, but he forced me. And that guy kept picking me up day after day after day and taking me to meetings. And it was incredible. And I was going to lots of meetings. Another question that came up the other day is, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Hell, I could have stopped going after 4 days. I think I went to 90 meetings. I just kept going to meetings in the morning, and meetings at mid-morning, and meetings in the afternoon, and meetings at night. And I'm going to meetings. Boy, I wasn't very busy at the time, so I was able to go to meetings. But I'm not drinking. I'm not drinking. Otto told me not to drink, and some reason I'm not drinking. I go to this meeting, this Wednesday noon meeting, And they asked me to read the traditions there. Now, I don't do that. I don't take part. I don't want to do that. Please don't ask me to do that. And there's a whole 10 people at this meeting, maybe. And they say, come on, Bob, read the traditions. Okay, I'll do it for you. You know, and so I get to the traditions. And I start reading them. Except I don't read the numbers. Come on, I'm an old-timer. You're an old-timer. It's just redundant. So I don't read the numbers. And all of a sudden, this guy in the back stands up and he says, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we read everything that's on the page. We leave nothing out. We're not interested in your interpretation of the big book or anything you have to say. If it's there, this guy, I hated him. That son of a... Doesn't he know I'm sensitive? You know? He is screaming at me. The following day when he became my sponsor, we started working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he had me taking commitments and reading the book and going to meetings and doing all kinds of stuff that would get me there. And it worked for me. Somehow my life was working well. I wasn't drinking, and he told me stupid things. I didn't mind in the beginning when he told me to work the steps and do this and do that and take commitments and sweep the floors and put out chairs. But when he said things like, get a job, you know, pay your bills. Does he know that when you haven't paid bills that long, that everybody wants a $300,000 deposit? You want electricity, boy? $300,000 deposit. You want some water? $100,000 deposit. Everybody wants a deposit. He says, you'll work it out. And what I was doing is slowly but surely, everything was falling into place. I mean, they talk about those little AA miracles, you know. All of a sudden, I turn around and hit a switch. A light goes on. Miracle! You know, whoever expected those things to happen? Now I'm sober a year, and I get a call from people back here, and they say, Bob, come back east. We got a job for you. You'll make a lot of money. Everything is going to work out. And I go to my sponsor. He says, you've been good, Bob. You've been taking all the actions. Go back to New York. And he says, go take that job. Start paying your bills. Start making amends. You'll be okay. I have faith in you. So thank you. So I go back. I come back here, and I move to a little town by the name of Bayonne, New Jersey. In Bayonne, New Jersey, there's a bar on every corner and one in the middle of the block. And it's so easy to make a new best friend, I got to tell you. All you have to do is put a $20 bill on the bar. But I didn't. I did what he said. I went to a meeting and I said, I need help. And they gathered around me. It was incredible. And they just started helping me. And I got to tell you, I didn't like these people. I'm from Brooklyn and I thought they talked funny. They called me California Bob. And they had hour meetings. We had hour and a half meetings. I don't like hour meetings. I later found out they talked fast enough so they could get everything into the hour. But it worked, and I found this guy to be my sponsor, a fellow by the name of Joe Ryan. Joe Ryan, I got by chasing him around the church basement while he was sweeping up. He had 38 years at the time, and he was a magnificent man. He had spoken to Bill Wilson's 20th anniversary. I mean, he was an incredible man. His last known address before he got sober was underneath the Bayonne Bridge. But this man taught me everything I know, and I used to go around with him, and I used to be with him, and he was a wonderful man. He taught me that in Alcoholics Anonymous, gratitude is a verb. It's a verb. What we do is we take action. We take action. We don't talk about things. All people talk about things. We take actions. We take actions that we don't believe in. And somehow they work. What actions don't we believe in? We don't believe in not drinking. That's a good action. Hey, we're the ones who say, you know, we deserve a drink. Duh. You know, and then we fall down and we puke and we get hurt and we do things that we lose jobs and lose homes and lose wives and lose husbands and but we deserve a drink. We don't get it. We don't get it. And all of a sudden, our lives start working. Joe was showing me to take the appropriate action. I traveled with him wherever he went, and it was wonderful. I remember going with Joe one time after a couple of years, and we're going to the meeting, God knows, all the way out. He used to speak constantly. And he says, Bob, I think tonight you'll speak. No, 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 no. Joe, I don't do that. No, Bob, I think tonight you'll speak. Joe, you don't understand. You know what? We'll get to the meeting, and I'll put out all the chairs, and then I'll sweep up. I'll mop the floors. I'll welcome everybody into the meeting. And maybe I'll speak next time. No, Bob, I think tonight you'll speak. And I really didn't want to speak. I told you, I can't do anything without a drink. But Joe was telling me I'm going to speak. About 3 minutes before the meeting is starting, they're calling everybody. I said, Joe, you know what? We'll do this next time. This isn't going to work for me. He says, don't worry, Bob, speak as long as you can, and then I'll pick up the slack. I said, no, Joe, you don't understand. I haven't shaken this much since I had the DTs. And he said, Bob, it's only God shaking the truth out of you. And what I got to do was speak. And they haven't shut me up since. But my life works because of this program. This program is an amazing program. It's simple. Many people tried. I hear so many people say that you know, it's very complex, and it's not complex. It's a complex problem for simple. No, it's a simple program for complex people, and we're not even that complex. We just think opposite. We think opposite. So what we have to do is we have to keep doing those things. We have to put our behinds in a seat. We have to sit in the front in the summer more stupid than other section. We have to do the things we need to do. We have to talk to other alcoholics. We have to do the things that'll make our lives work. Just come to meetings and go to work. And do the right thing, and try and be ethical, and try to practice these principles in all our affairs. Our lives are good when we do that. If you're new, ask somebody to be your sponsor. Ask somebody tonight. Don't interview people. Just remember that your head is the one that keeps telling you to drink. Your head is the one that keeps telling you to use. Just ask somebody next to you, and as long as he or she keeps saying, don't do it, you're fine. Read the book. Do what you have. If nobody wants to take you to meetings and nobody, just grab their leg. Let them drag you around. That's part of it. I got to tell you, this program is wonderful. This program is wonderful. It makes your life work. It makes you feel good. And I'm not saying every day is sunshine and rainbows. What I'm saying is that your life is okay. And okay sure as hell beats what we went through before. No longer do I have an inability to learn from past experience. Thank you.